They're recording in progress. And then I go, a couple of things to announce. Actually, I forgot about this, but this is worth recording and announcing for everybody. Those of you who are connected to the nightclub community, we have a Lucidity induction groups that started. And I think I see Katie here. There she is. Katie is one of the principals here. So this is what they wrote to me, which is pretty cool. I'm excited about this. Greeting, fellow dreamers. There are three of them: Bodhi, Chelsea, and Katie. Some of you may know Chelsea. She's been working with me for quite a while. Independently lucid dreamers since early on in our lives. We formed a dream circle in 2019 and have been practicing lucid dreaming and dream yoga together ever since. We're offering a monthly lucidity induction group to support greater lucidity in dreams and waking life. Each month, we will share lucidity induction techniques and invite participants to practice the methods until the group meets again. By practicing together, the three of us have experienced significantly enhanced lucidity, and we hope to inspire this effect within the nightclub community. For those of you who resonate with this offering, we look forward to expanding our lucidity together. And so the first session is going to be, second Saturday of each month at 11 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. Okay, cool. So let me click into the questions that got piped in here. Let me do that. And then we can open it up to all kinds of things. Some of these I have not seen before. They just came in. Okay. This is from Patrick. I introduced a friend to your webinar videos. Thank you for that. She liked them. Cool. But she didn't like what you said about Buddhas not sleeping or not dreaming. Oh, sorry to offend her. Well, Buddhas don't sleep and they don't dream. So I'm not making this up. I'm just being a mouthpiece for the tradition. But let's see what she has to say. I'm curious why she didn't like it. What is it that these awakened beings see when they sleep? Okay, well, there's a number of questions enveloped here, so I'll address them one by one. Well, basically what they see is they see the formless nature of awareness, which is all there is. So basically as Rumi put it, they open into wider rings of being. And so fundamentally what happens is they differentiate from the waking state, the most contracted, constricted state. They open into the liminal state. They see whatever's appearing in that liminal dimension. Then they drop into lucid dreaming. Now this is a full Buddhas don't dream. And the reason they don't dream is because there's nothing left in the unconscious mind to see to dream. Dreams are seeded by the contents of the unconscious mind. By definition, a Buddha is an awakened one. There is no unconsciousness in a Buddha. So there's nothing to see to dream. So no more dreams. Or another way to say it really is everything becomes a dream. Saying the same thing. Everything is recognized in a manifestation of mind. And so I'm a little bit like your friend. When I first heard this 25, 30 years ago, I was incredulous. I was like, I said, there's just no way. But I asked so many incredible meditation masters over and over and over, and they all say the same thing. For sure, the Buddhas, by definition, they don't sleep and dream. Now, it doesn't mean they stay up all night playing video games. No. What they do will be addressed on some of the other questions. So what they fundamentally see when they sleep is awareness sees itself. So it's a type of, it's called Rangri Geshe. It's a reflexive awareness. And so what they'll see as they transition with full lucidity from the waking state, they'll every appearance that takes place is flooded with awareness, and every appearance that arises is reflexively aware. So they don't see anything because there isn't a they. The things still appear. And so that's not so easy to really talk about, because that's what it's basically talking about how Buddhists perceive, which is non-dualistically. Really hard to talk about in a dualistic medium. Can they still get precognitive dreams or glimpses of the future? Sure, if they want to. Glimpses of the past? Sure, if they want to. Yeah. Again, they have the capacity. When you're talking about fully awakened ones, and again, awakening occurs at least 10 classic levels in the Buddhist tradition, at least the 10 bhumis. And along these 10 progressive stages of awakening, all kinds of amazing new capacities arise. When you reach the 11th bhumi, then it's quite literally inconceivable what that mind can do. It's just beyond gate-gate. It's beyond anything we can even imagine. Precognitive dreams, if it's a benefit, for sure. Glimpses of the future, for sure. Can they meet with dead beings and teachers in their dreams and receive teachings? Absolutely, positively. Totally. But they don't need to receive teachings because they're already awakened. So if they elected to do that, bodhisattvas who still are on the bhumis, the grounds that haven't attained full awakening, then they in fact can. They can travel. Again, I am just being a mouthpiece for the tradition. This is not coming from me. They can travel to the Pure Lands. They can receive teachings from anyone they wish. They have that kind of power. But for fully awakened ones, they don't need to receive teachings. Can they meet with dead beings? For sure. And one level, tongue in cheek, like my friend Bob Thurman says, there are no dead people. I love it when he says that. There are no dead people. It's just basically transitioning, removing worn out fabric, worn out clothes, worn out bodies. And then awareness, formless awareness just continues. That never dies because it was never born. It's a formless and therefore deathless awareness. May not be completely satisfactory responses, but it's so difficult to talk in bullet point fashion about things like non-duality, what the awakened ones actually perceive. That is not easy to talk about. In their sleep, can they give teachings to people who are dreaming? Absolutely, positively. And that's kind of what they do. So historically, the Buddha Shakyamuni, what we know as the historical Buddha, that's what he did when he dreamt. He went to Tushita Heaven, where his mother was, and allegedly he taught her the Abhidharma. And so they have the capacity, they can go to different dimensions, they can emanate. I mean, it's just unbelievable what they can do, right? They can multiply, they can emanate, and they can give teachings. And that's pretty much, I mean, from my understanding, that is kind of what they do when they transition, check out of the awakened state. Then they have these extraordinary capacities to do things in these other frequency domains. Then a nice word about my reverse meditation book. That's very kind of you for saying that. And I hope that answer is somewhat satisfactory. Not easy to talk about this stuff. Okay, this one is from Amalia. Sorry if I'm mispronouncing it. Two questions close to my heart. What is your perspective on astral projection? Is it the same as lucid dreaming? If not, how does it differ? It's not the same. So the Buddhist tradition doesn't really use that languaging, but it does resonate with what they would talk about as special body generation. It's actually part of dream yoga tradition. They can create what's called a special dream body. It's actually stage seven in my schema of dream yoga. And then they can actually differentiate from this form body. Then they can do what in contemporary terms is called astral projection. It's not the same as lucid dreaming. And in fact, most people who think they're having an OBE or astral projection thing are actually having a hyperlucid dream. You can actually test this. If you're a person who has this and you're not sure, you want to find out, am I having a lucid dream or having an OBE? Well, one thing you can do to test it is spin. Spin. If you spin and you stop and it's the same scene, it could very well be an out-of-body experience or an astral projection. If you spin and you stop and it's completely different, almost always it's just a hyperlucid dream. I'm not dismissing either. They're fantastic events. They're wonderful accomplishments, but they're not the same. If you really want to read about this stuff, with some rigor, Evan Thompson's masterpiece, Waking Dreaming Being, is an incredible book, Self and Consciousness and Neuroscience, Meditation and Philosophy. He talks about this stuff in tremendous detail. So they're not the same. I've heard some people say that astral projection is in a higher degree of consciousness than a lucid dream. Not necessarily, no. In such a scale, we'd have non-lucid dreams, then lucid dreams, and then astral projection dreams in that order. I mean, I would agree with the first part, non-lucid dreams. But here's the thing. I mean, it's debatable whether constant lucidity in a dream is superior. I tend to believe that is the case. Alan Wallace tends to believe that case is the case. Evan Thompson and others don't. And I think there's some credibility to this slight doubt because it enhances the power of regular non-lucid dreams and the ability to work with solid dream interpretation. But as a standard approach, I think if you put it in quotations, you could say, if you put it carefully, that you go from non-lucid dreams to lucid dreams to the capacity to do things like what's called a special dream body type thing. So in that sense, yes, I would agree. Hopefully that makes sense. The other question is on the nature of reality. Well, another easy one. more specifically on the continuity of consciousness. Okay. In my experience, my observation of how I perceive everything, I notice a discontinuity on the stream of perception. That's true, because perception is saccadic. By definition, our perception is parsed, it's quantized. It's like a pointillistic painting. Actually, things appear in Abhidharma. Abhidharma is like the psychology of Buddhist philosophy. And everything, dharmas are referred to as like atoms of experience. And so in that regard, yes, everything that occurs just occurs at like a pointillistic painting. It's pixelated, for sure. And even cognitive science will tell you this. The quantum physicists will tell you this. There is a discontinuity. What creates the stream, the seeming stream, a term coined by William James, is nothing more than the speed of the untamed, untrained mind. It glosses over the discontinuity, fabricating, stitching, creating the illusion of continuity, and therefore the illusion of a self. So what you're saying here is spot on. You perceive a discontinuity, for sure. It's as if the stream of consciousness was more like a frame-like river. Yes, exactly, than a continuous river. Spot on. I perceive something, smell, thought, vision, and then I perceive something else. I find there are gaps in between. Yes, for sure, 100%. That makes me think that consciousness is a discontinuous flow. Yes, it is. But awareness isn't. So this is where we get a little bit specific. There's a difference between consciousness and awareness. Consciousness in Buddhism, not in Hinduism, but in Buddhism, consciousness has a pejorative tinge. Because consciousness, by definition, is always associated with duality. It always has a beginning. It always has an end. So there's a difference between consciousness and awareness. Consciousness is actually fractured, bifurcated awareness. Awareness does not have any breaks. It's called Machikpa Tigle in Tantra, the indestructible continuum, Buddha, Chitta Santana in Theravadan traditions, Tathagatagarbha or Buddha nature in the Mahayana. That continues, that's unbroken. In that formless awareness, there are no gaps. The gaps only occur in consciousness. So there's a difference there. Are these gaps what we call ignorance? No. No, the gaps, again, in consciousness altogether is a manifestation of ignorance, believe it or not, because consciousness always perceives things dualistically. There's always a subject, an object, and something connecting them, / consciousness. But consciousness doesn't connect. Consciousness separates. And so in that regard, the whole thing is ignorance. And the gaps would actually be intimations of potential wisdom. So that one's a little bit flipped. Now, I also realize that there's something perceiving those gaps. So that must be continuous. High five, spot on. Yes, that's awareness. That is continuous. It's not consciousness. Oh, there you go. You got it. I guess you'd call that awareness. Big hug, high five. Yes, that's right. I hope all this makes sense and that you can offer some light. Hopefully I just did. I live in Europe, so unfortunately I can't follow. Okay, the rest of it is more like logistic stuff. So hopefully that was of some benefit. Okay, from Michelle. My dreams are all appearing in a sort of darkness, and I don't exist as a separate consciousness, but just as an observing consciousness or point of view with no separate dream body. Cool. I wake up with a heavy feeling. I wonder why. If you're here, Michelle, I'm curious. If you're here, why do you wake up with a heavy feeling? Once I am dreaming lucidly, which did not happen yet, how could I understand the darkness? Oh, that's a great question. So yeah, this one I had a chance to look at. So let me see. I'm going to pull up something. Hold on. Let me do this for you. Where to go to? I pulled up a couple quotes. Hold on. Because I thought this question was pretty interesting. Not that the other ones aren't. They're all pretty cool. But let me get this one. Okay. Where did I do that? Oh, hold on. Yeah, that's a bummer. I extracted a bunch of quotes to support this, but I can't find the email that I sent to myself. So let me go back. Hold on, stay with me. Do a one breath meditation session. Yeah, so the darkness thing. I actually pulled out four or five supporting quotes, but I can't find them, which is a bit of a drag. How can you understand the darkness? Well, this is actually really super interesting because darkness is actually the color of non-duality, even more than light. I mean, in kind of classic non-dual traditions, darkness is actually considered the non-dual, so to speak, color. Everything arises out of darkness, everything returns to darkness. And so this is why people, some of the most advanced practices are things like dark retreat, where you work with this sort of thing, sleep yoga, yoga nidra, where you work with this within the nocturnal arena. And so you can understand this darkness several different ways. If you are perceiving the darkness, so in other words, if there, this gets subtle, but it's important. If there's still a subtle sense that I, and this is Michelle, right? I, Michelle, am experiencing the darkness, then that's not quite the luminosity of the mind. Because the luminosity of the mind actually can sometimes register as a self-reflexive, aware, luminous darkness, radiant darkness. And you want to check out this YouTube clip if you can get it. It's called A Deep and Dazzling Darkness. It's an interview with the mathematical physicist John Wren Lewis. This is a mind-bending interview. He's a really sharp guy, and he is interviewed in a very skillful way about this near-death experience. And he has some unbelievable things to say about darkness. I highly recommend it. It's a really, really a provocative interview. And so if there's still a sense that I'm perceiving the dark, again, that's still consciousness. That's still not yoga nidra. That's still not luminosity yoga. That's basically you perceiving a contentless, formless dimension of your mind, but it's still within the realm of consciousness because there's still a reflexive agent that makes you come out of it saying, I'm seeing the darkness. If you have an experience where, and this is again hard to put into words, it's similar to what we were talking about earlier. If you have an experience where the darkness is experiencing itself, and you only retrospectively, you come out of the experience, you wake up from whatever the dream, and then you retrofit, you look back on it, and you append this type of nomenclature. When you're having that type of experience, that can be an experience of deep yoga nidra or true luminosity yoga, which is where you reach this kind of deep, dazzling, formless dimension of awareness itself. And so it's subtle, but it's actually quite critical because that's the formless awareness thing. That's the fruition of yoga nidra, the fruition of sleep yoga. And it's like graduate school nocturnal meditation. High five if you can do that. That's the fruition. Basically, that can then develop into a kind of 24/7 awareness. Because then what you can do, there's no you. This is why it's so tricky. When you dissolve into that space, there's no you. You, so to speak, everything's in quotations, become that black light. But what is so cool about it is actually from that perspective, you can then see as that awareness takes on form, takes on light, manifest as an automatic lucid dream, manifest when you wake up from that automatic lucid living, which is the experience of what's called ultra pure illusory form. Basically, this is in fact the way the Buddhas see. So, Michelle, if you're here and want to say a little bit more about it, this is cool. The only thing, again, like I'm curious is why do you wake up with a heavy feeling? To me, that would suggest that there it's just an experience of contentless, formless awareness. But it's I'm not I'm sorry, not awareness, formless consciousness. It's still not formless awareness. Does that make sense? This stuff is not easy to put into words. To get a glimpse of this, in addition to the interview with John Wayne Lewis, read either the first or second edition because he didn't change it much. Tenzin Wangyal Rinpoche's The Tibetan Yogas of Dream and Sleep. He has a pretty cool section on sleep yoga. There's very little from the Buddhist perspective in public print. There's more in like the restricted text and stuff. But Tenzin Wangyal Rinpoche talks with real elegance about sleep yoga in this type of thing. The other place to get a glimpse of this is in his book, Wonders of the Natural Mind, where a really rare exposition by a meditation master of his experience in Dark Retreat, because this is where the stuff really, so to speak, comes to light. So if you're here, Michelle, and want to come on and dance around with this, more than welcome. And I'll see if I can find these great quotes I had. But anyway, one more, and then we can see what other questions came in live. Hi, Andrew. It's been a while. I have more experiences to report. I'm going to try to my hardest. I did the sky meditation, and I want to report what I saw. I don't remember, Aaron, what I instructed about that. But anyway, lots of sparkles and shimmers similar to this, and then he sends a link. Yeah, so sky meditation, sky gazing, and I don't remember, Aaron, talking to you about that. I apologize. This is another classic Dzogchen meditation. We're talking about some pretty lofty practices today. This is a wonderful practice where it's like what it sounds like. You go, I do this practice a lot because it's just so cool. You basically just sit and stare out in the deep blue sky with absolute stillness. And when you do that, when the eye starts to settle down, all these quite remarkable visions starts to appear. These lights, these induced, sometimes they're entopic visions. They're actually brought about by leukocytes traveling through the capillaries in your eyes. And you can sort that out because those are just particularly interesting, but there's no affect to them. They don't have like a spiritual charge. They're more like, wow, this is cool. When you have an experience of what are called the irreducible swirling bindus associated with a practice called Togal, that's a whole different story, because then you're starting to actually see the radiant luminosity of the mind using the background of the sky. So this is something that have to be a little bit more back and forth between you and me, to see what is actually going on. I try to find a good gift, but I also can see them overlaying my vision all the time. It's almost a glowing. Well, that's actually kind of cool. Good for you. If you want to, let me finish this, then I'll see if I can recommend some reading for you. But I also see something else. I will describe it and try to find a good image to explain. Imagine concentric circles, maybe two or three, but they are teeny tiny and there are multiples once stuck together. They kind of remind me of images of a virus. Yeah, this is classic sacred geometry. This is cool. So this is the type that are called pintas if you're doing ayahuasca visions. I read about them. Actually, no, when I did ayahuasca last year, I spent a week in Costa Rica. I didn't have the pintas. Actually, no, I take that back. I forgot. I did. That was one of the highlights, was seeing all these really cool sacred geometric patterns. But there, for me, there was nothing particularly new because I had done this with the Dzogchen sky gazing practice. But this, what you're saying here, this is pretty cool. This sounds, in fact, like the sacred geometry. And I apologize since I just got this. I wasn't able to look at the links that you sent with the images. They float independently. Okay, I can see it clearly if I'm out walking or when I'm in the pool looking at the water. Excellent. So one of the reasons you're going to say like, okay, well, that's kind of cool, but like, okay, so what? Well, what you can do with this, if it is in fact a glimpse of these energy drops, these bindus, is they're fantastic de-reifying visions. So when you have this kind of superimposition, the superposition of these light sources coming from within the super subtle body. This arises from a body that's even more subtle than your subtle body. The lights actually come from there. And then you're thinking like, well, okay, like why? Well, because they can help you de-reify your world. When you're looking at an object and all of a sudden it doesn't have the object constancy that it once had, you see it more shimmering and fluttering around. That's very powerful in deconstructing your sense of duality. And so that's one of the great gifts of doing this sort of thing. You might like wonder, like, why am I doing this, right? So I will refer a text to you in a second. I have also tried doing Tara Sadhana, very cool, and the lucid dream state. Wow, good for you. Excellent. Next, I will try holding my breath and falling backwards. Yes, you have to do that. I got into this big time this summer, and I just had, let me share this dream. This is so cool. So this is like my new big dream yoga practice. And I'm surprised I hadn't tried it before, but somebody, pretty senior student, at one of my programs suggested it. And it was like, oh my God, why didn't somebody suggest this to me before? So I started doing it. I highly recommend it. The next time you have a lucid dream, try it. Literally, just fall backwards. That's it. and then come back and let me know how the experience goes. So I've done this a number of times. So this is what happened like 2 nights ago. Check this out. This was awesome. So I had a pretty cool lucid dream, flying around doing some stuff. And then I realized, okay, enough game time. I want to do the falling back type thing. And so for some reason, I flew in front of two people, one of who's an Acharya, who I know, a wonderful person. And I came in front of him. And I don't know where this impulse came from, but I'm flying in front of him. I'm pretty lucid. And it was like, okay, mommy, watch me, right? So here I am in my dream body. And so I fall back in my dream. And unlike the other times when I've done it, which don't tend to last all that long, and some really interesting things do happen. This one was pretty effing awesome because I was falling backwards through this formless luminous space that I'm telling you about. And it just kept going. And it just kept going. And what was hysterical is I seemed to have enough wherewithal around me to actually shout up to the Acharya and this other person, I'm still falling. I mean, it was like effing hysterical, right? So I'm falling through this cognitive space. And every once in a while, because it lasted a long time, I just kept shouting up to them, I'm still falling. And what came to mind was this amazing statement you've probably heard from Trungpa Rinpoche. The bad news is you're falling through space without a parachute. That's exactly what it felt like. The good news is there is no ground. And that also came to mind. And I said, wow, this is like freaking awesome. So I'm just like falling through this cognitive, whatever you want to call it. And then the second part I haven't been able to figure out. I kind of entered this, I don't want to call it a dimension or domain, but I entered a really like hyperlucid, I it's really hard to put into words. This particular kind of dimension color thing that was full of these ineffable, super radiant, almost paper mache kind of metallic. I mean, I've never experienced anything like it. And as I fell through, I fell into this like it's almost like upside down seaweed with just weird colored, beautiful freaking textures and stuff. And so because it was so fascinating, it was like a little kid, little babies with all this shit, floating above them. I had to stop in this free fall. And I'm sitting there batting this stuff around with arms I don't really have. And then I tried putting them in my mouth. I tried eating them. And the whole thing just got so effing hysterical and so bizarre that I actually woke up laughing. But the take-home message is the next time you have a lucid dream, try falling backwards and then talk to me about it. It's really cool. That was a fun dream. Okay. Yeah, so next time I'll try my breath and fall backwards. Holding my breath and falling backwards, absolutely. I highly recommend it. I haven't tried re-entering the Dharmakaya from the lucid dream. Well, I might just say one small thing here, Aaron. You never leave the Dharmakaya. So don't think that you have to re-enter it or return to it. The Dharmakaya is always already present. So you're actually technically not re-entering it. You're recognizing it. You're recognizing it. So that it's a subtle, again, subtle but important point. Because if you think you have to re-enter the Dharmakaya, that introduces a very subtle cosmological dualism that somehow you have to return to this. No, there's nothing but the Dharmakaya. It's inherent in the openness of whatever you experience. So you're actually not re-entering it. You're basically recognizing it, recognizing it. You're not re-entering it because you can't leave it. You can't leave the Dharmakaya. The issue is whether you recognize that you're in it or not. So knowing that will help you relax. It's like, oh, I've got to come back to the Dharmakaya. I've got to reestablish contact with the Dharmakaya. No, you're never separated from it, man. You just have to recognize it, see? So, and the way you do that is to stop trying. That's the kicker. So that's a subtle point, but this stuff is subtle. I've tried re-entering the Dharmakaya from the lucid dream. Okay, I call it the fireworks dream. And I know you said don't chase it. Yeah, don't chase it. I won't chase it, but I think it'll be fun trying it again. Yeah, totally. I mean, nice report, my friend. I'll check out the links that you sent. The book that you might want to look at, Aaron, it's not an easy read, but it is profound. Hold on, let me show it to you.
Oh, of course I can't see it. Give me one second. Oh, here it is.
This is the book to get that'll blow your socks off. Naked Seeing, The Great Perfection, The Wheel of Time, and Visionary Buddhism in Renaissance Tibet. This is a effing masterpiece. One of the most profound texts I've ever read. Not easy. This is a really deep dive into these types of visions through the Bun tradition, Kalachakra Tantra, and Dzogchen. I've read it. I mean, if you looked at my pages, I've read it. I mean, every page is marked and underlined and dog-eared. And every time I go into dark retreat, this is my Bible. So if you're interested in exploring this topic, Wonders of the Natural Mind by Tenzin Wangyal Rinpoche, this book, Naked Seeing by Christopher Hatchell, Heart Drops of Dharmakaya is another one. There's not much out there in the literature, but this stuff is really cool and it's really profound. So, somewhat quick clip through a series of really wonderful, deep questions. And so now at this point, I can open it up for those of you who have been patient to see if there's anything in the chat column or any live questions, contributions. I will go through the chat column first, but if somebody wants to come on with a question or comment, doesn't have to be just a question, let me know. Okay, how do we find more about Bardo? How do we find more about the Bardo? Oh my gosh, there's probably 50 books out there. My top five, Luminous Emptiness by Francesca Freemantle. Journey of the Mind by Trungpa Rinpoche, Mind Beyond Death by Pumla Rinpoche, Peaceful Death, Joyful Rebirth by Tukulti Rinpoche. And then if you want to know a little bit about how this relates practically, then my book Preparing to Die also goes into the Bardos. And then all the courses that I do, I teach week-long stuff on the Bardos. So Marie, those are my top four. The other one, of course, that people sometimes get rankled that I still recommend is Sogyal Rinpoche's Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. He may have gone south later, but that book is still pretty brilliant, in my opinion. I'm not the only one that thinks that. Many people do, including Pema Chodron. Okay. Oh, yeah. How do you spell? It's Rangrig, Rangrig. Yeshe, a reflexively aware wisdom. So Rang, Rang Rig, Rig, self-aware, Yeshe, wisdom. Rang Rig, Yeshe, Yeshe. This is this non-dual reflexively aware. It's the highest form of knowing and perception. It's actually referred to as a tantric epistemology, tantric knowing. This is how the Buddhists see the world. The world sees itself. Oh, yeah. So if you want to know about this, geez, I completely forgot. My book, I go to great pains. I actually forgot about this. I go to great pains unpacking this in my book, Dreams of Light. I have like probably 100 pages on this topic. I completely forgot. So if you want to dive into probably the most accessible rendering of reflexively aware wisdom, Dreams of Light, that's one reason I wrote that book, is because I wanted to get this topic in a more digestible public arena. So that one may help. Okay, there's an influx of ladybugs seeking warmth on certain walls where I live. Yes, I was just in Virginia 2 weeks ago with Tenzin Wangyal, and it was amazing how many ladybugs were there. Many are dead when I find them. Yep. How do I connect with their minds? Well, that's a beautiful question. With one, I understand, but is it just seeing all their minds at once? Well, this is a really lovely question, Marie. One way to connect with them is through just recognizing the commonality of the sentient condition, that it's not just you that has awareness, consciousness, all sentient forms. You can also connect to them if you have any resonance, pardon the pun, with mantra recitation. A mantra like Om Mani Padme Hum, it's a fantastically powerful way. This is what I do whenever I see a dead animal, a dead insect. When I'm around that many insects, you might imagine I'm reciting this mantra all the time. So it's a wonderful way. It's a mantra. It's a sound of compassion. It's literally the sound of Chenrezig's mind, the awakened mind. And so that particular mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum, is a fantastic way to connect with other sentient forms. Oh yeah, Rangri Geshe, thank you, Kunsang. High five. That's it. Thank you, my friend. Yeah, the death program. Yes, it's starting. The death program is starting in February. Stay tuned. We haven't posted it yet, but we're going to post it within the week. Yeah, Bhumis, Bhumi, the 10 Bhumis, the 10 grounds. These are the ways the Mahayana tradition talks about the 10 stages of awakening from that perspective. There are other mappings of it and from different traditions. The Theravadin traditions have their own approach, stream enterer, once returner, that thing, all the way going up to the Arhat. The other traditions have their own, but the 10 Bhumis are a classic Mahayana exposition of the 10 stages in that mapping. Oh, Marie's got a lot of questions today. And for insects, do I pray for them to go to the Pure Land? Just recite the mantra. To be my guru, to be born in the human realm. Just keep it simple, Marie. Recite the mantra. Okay, I see a page for sleep yoga class on however, when I click on it, the link doesn't work. Oh, okay, Kathy, that's good to know. Whoa, note to self. We need to fix that because I had a whole write-up about that. So thank you for that. I was not aware of that. Note to self to get that fixed. Because there should be something there. Somehow it got nuked. So thank you for bringing that to my attention. We'll fix it. Yeah, the name of the book is Waking, Dreaming, Being by Evan Thompson. It's a masterpiece. And if you listen, I did a podcast interview with him after he wrote this book on my Edge of Mind platform. I know Evan. He's amazing. So check out my interview with him. But this book is a tour de force. It's again, it's a little academic, scholarly, semi-science type thing, but boy, it's really good. Have any lucid dreamers requested a teaching from a Buddha? Yeah, I do it all the time. All the time. Why not? And they'll come to you. Can you visit actual beings such as enlightened ones, Buddhas in the dream? Absolutely, positively. Yes. Meaning they are not fabrications of the mind. That is correct. They are not. They're just as real or unreal as you are. And you can actually invite them into your mind space, or you can, whether you go to them or they come to you, it doesn't really matter. But when they're in your mind space because, I mean, I guess you could say archetypally, it could be the wisdom of your own Buddha nature speaking that way. On one level, does it really matter? But the tradition is actually quite clear here. Yes, they can infiltrate your mind space. If you have a connection with them, you relate to them, you can help them bring them in and ask for guidance and instructions. I do it all the time. Okay. Boy, nice comments here. I have heard that dreamers can visit and receive teachings from actual beings, especially enlightened ones. Yes, they can. Okay, a wonderful thing about Francesca distinguishes luminosity from clarity. Yes. Yeah, this is a technical thing, Dwight. A message to me. I talk about this in quite a bit of detail again in my book Dreams of Light, where I talk about clear light, as in clear light mind. Clarity refers to the emptiness, luminosity. I mean, light refers to luminosity. And I go to great pains in that book to separate out the relationship of luminosity to emptiness and what they actually mean. So I've riffed about this a ton in that book. Okay. Whoa, there's a lot here. This is great. As I read through these, I'm going to open them up and get through some of the live ones. So otherwise, people are going to leave. So, Katie, fire away. And then I'll come back to some of these that were here.
Hey.
Here. Hi.
Hi. I have an illusory form question.
Okay.
So I have had this experience maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 times now. Usually it happens at night when I'm falling asleep, but I'm actually still awake and I'm not in a liminal space yet. But sometimes it's happened maybe I think twice during the day where it feels like the world around me is shaking, like there's an earthquake happening.
Cool.
But it's not like I haven't had a visual effect with it. Like it's just it's like a feeling, but it feel, and this is usually why it happens when I'm like lying in bed and my eyes are kind of closed already, but it feels like a shaking. And I'm just wondering, is that part of what happens in illusory form or?
Yeah, it's hard to say, Katie, you know, with complete authority, what's going on. So how long does it last? And what does it feel like? Does it feel somehow threatening? Does it feel just like interesting? How long does it last? Can you say a little bit more?
It doesn't feel threatening. It's usually like maybe a minute or something like that. Like not super long, but long enough where it feels significant. And I haven't like been reactive to it. It's just kind of like, oh, this is interesting. And I kind of wonder for a moment if there's an earthquake happening.
Right.
But then I realize there's not. But it's not disconcerting or anything. It's just strange.
And yeah, and how long into the, like from when your head hits the pillow to when you start to notice this, how long?
I don't know. It's hard to say. Like, I mean, I fall asleep pretty quickly most nights, so not that long, maybe like a couple minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just shooting from the hip. I can't say with total authority, but here's what comes to mind. It could actually be the earth element dissolving, because when you fall asleep, you're going through a concordant experience of the dissolution processes, right?
Okay.
I'm curious. Do you ever notice like a yellowish color? Is there any kind of affect a color that you notice in your experience?
Nothing visual.
Nothing visual. Okay. You may want to be aware of two things. One, the possibility of noticing a little bit of yellow.
Okay.
Secondly, the possibility of also noticing a kind of a mirage-like quality. But I can't say with authority what's going on. It could be a number of things. But one thing it could be, because I know you a little bit, you're pretty sensitive, it could actually be a recognition of the earth element dissolving into water.
Yeah.
So as that kind of comes undone, you know, sometimes you can feel it as a kind of a visceral kind of quaking thing. It could also be somehow associated with the winds transitioning, you know, into the central channel, because that's what's happening. So I can't say what's total authority. You know, I mean, it's actually quite amazing. This is one of the really cool things about this whole journey of being a psychonaut, exploring the nature of the mind under day and night conditions, and in particular being an onironaut, exploring the nocturnal mind, because there are so many quite remarkable things that can happen that don't always fit into classic kind of textbook cookie cutter experiences. Mm-hmm. And I still have, after doing this for decades, I'm still surprised by things. It's like, well, I've never seen that before. I've never experienced that before. And so again, I can't speak with any authority. If it isn't somehow panic inducing, if it's more like, wow, this is kind of interesting. Yeah. What I would do is basically just, I think what you're already doing is just observe with a sense of curiosity, inquiry. And then what you could actually try to do, I do this a lot with these sorts of things, is incubate a dream to see if you can get an answer from your deeper self or from an external agent. Just sometimes just simply that heartfelt supplications, like what is this going on? What's going on here? So you might be surprised if you do a heartfelt dream incubation, you seed it, you might get this answer coming from within you. But the first thing that comes to mind is some probably dissolution of the earth element. That's why the sense of quaking is taking place. You might also want to look, I can't speak with any authority about this, but you may also want to explore a little bit about the actual Quaker tradition, because there might be something in that literature that could be of interest to you. I can't speak with any authority on that one, but for some reason that just entered my mind. So play with those two somewhere in there, but I can't say with any real authority what's going on.
Cool. Yeah, that really resonates. And the dissolution of the elements, it does happen before we reach the liminal state, right?
That's right. Yeah, well, that's actually part of the liminal space. So
the beginning of the liminal space.
Yeah, exactly. And then it transitions through the liminal space until you fall asleep. So it doesn't always follow really specific classic textbook progression order, but the dissolution of earth to water to fire to wind to space, for sure.
Yeah.
So the invitation would be pay notice, a little bit more notice to what you might be feeling visually with your mind's eye. See if you're noticing a yellow quality, because that's the color that's associated with Earth. So,
Awesome.
and then get back to me. Let me know what you see.
Okay, thank you so much.
Cool. Oh, there's Aaron. Hey, buddy. Thank you, man. Thank you. So you filed this awesome question, right?
Yeah, that was me. I have a lot of crazy things I see, so.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. Yeah. So what else can you say? How else can I help you on this? Good stuff.
Well, I was gonna tell you about my recent lucid dreaming experiences. I appreciate what you told me about like the things that I see as well. So definitely wrote the book down and gonna get that.
It'll blow your socks off.
But I have been doing the Tara sadhanas and the lucid dream. Like I like to have fun in lucid dreams, I guess. But so I've done it maybe 4 times now. Each time it different things happen. I guess I'm expecting to see like a being, and the last time was the first time that I actually saw a being. And so,
And can you tell me what you saw?
yeah, of course. So I did the Tara sadhana. And then after it was all over, I was kind of disappointed, like, I really didn't see anything. So normally when I want to like find a being, I just literally like yell out for them many, many times. And typically they come.
Yeah, nice.
So
Okay.
this time from the sky, there was like a small dot, and it just got bigger and bigger and bigger as it moved towards me. It was kind of translucent, and then a being came up, and I was like, "Oh, Tara," and then she was like, "No, Varuna." I was like, "Okay, well, hey," and it was just very interesting because then the being started telling me about my relationships with other people, and as the being was telling me, the people would come as dream figures. And then the being would tell me like, okay, like a few of them, of course, were, people I know, my friends. They're like, oh, it's good that you let this person back in your life because your connection with this person is very strong, and this is actually very healing for them. Like it's healing for them. I was like, oh, okay. Then the other person, it was like, oh, this person also finds you very important, and your connection with them is very important. You two will have a great relationship moving forward. I was like, okay. So this just kept happening. Like, different people would come up, and I would look to my left and look to my right, and the being would tell me about the relationships that I had.
And so, and when they were, and when this being was telling you this, was it resonating with you? I mean, did it feel like
Oh, I
authentic?
went back and asked everybody, and all of them said they were like, well, it's kind of embarrassing. They're telling me it's embarrassing, but they were like, yeah, that's how I feel about you. I was like, oh, really? And so it was just, it was very interesting. So I mean, I wanted to ask, I don't know really much about deities. I just know the ones that you introduced me to, or there's another lady, Rachel Wooten. I go to her classes on Tara. And so I didn't know if I was like, if this was something that I was making up in my mind, or if there is a deity. I think it was saying Varuna or Varusha.
Yeah, probably Verochena, actually.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it was like, typically to me, when beings show up in my dreams, I don't think maybe they just show up in a way that I can handle it. Because sometimes they don't always show up as like what I see in the pictures of,
Totally. Yeah.
it shows up as something else. And even one time before this, I was doing a Tara sadhana, and it was like a Christmas tree, like lots of lights. And then when I was expecting Golden Tara to come, actually was like the tinsel on a Christmas tree, but it was like
Totally.
gold and white, like above my head, and like shimmering and shining down on me. And I was like, oh, okay, this is cool. But
Yeah. High five, man. I mean, you're like some shaman. You're like, you should read this book also called Civilized Shamans.
Civilized Shamans. Okay.
Yeah, really. It's all about the shamanistic dimension of Buddhism. Boy, I mean, really awesome, awesome, cool stuff, Aaron. You know, in terms of the deity thing, boy, that is a tree definitely worth barking up. Because the deity principle is colossal. So I you know, in terms of like action items, you might actually, first of all, listen to the interview I did. It should have been posted today on Edge of Mind with Lama Paldin. She's like the Tara Queen in the West. Mm. And her city, her community in California is called Sukha City. And the other Lama there is Lama, I just drew a blank. There's another one of her teachers. Her name will come to me in a second. I would check out that site. See if you can click on some of their programs, because that's their main deity. They work with Tara all the time. And so understanding deity principle is a really big deal, especially in the tantric traditions. Like, what are these deities? What do they represent? What are the potentialities? Why is this such a massive part of tantric practice? And so somewhat akin to the other stuff that you're sending my way, these are really deep, massive topics. So if you want more homework assignments on this stuff, you know, the literature on deity yoga is huge. It constitutes, some scholars say, they've done the math, you know, it constitutes about one third of all tantric practice. So gaining a familiarity with that sort of thing is really kind of a big deal. And the fact that you have this kind of intuitive resonance with it is even more compelling. So to follow up with that, I recommend you contact the people out at Sukha City. You can just tell them that you riffed with me a little bit. I recommended it. Listen to the podcast. I think it was just posted today with Lama Paldin. And then if you believe it or not, Dr. Google can tell you a few things. If you just read up on Tara practice. I'm trying to think if there's any particular book that immediately comes to mind on that. I mean, I know
Rachel Wooten's book, The Liberating Female Buddha, and then I also have another book. I forget what it's called. I have two books on Tara, and I kind of got the sadhanas and the mantras and the praises. So that's how what I did in the dream. You know, I did the sadhan, the praises, and then I did the petition, and then I did the mantras and. Yeah.
Check out Sukha City. Check out these people. They're wonderful, wonderful, wonderful organization. Lama Paulin is a rock star. And what they, again, that's their main deity practice. So they roll in this world and they can guide you through. And because, you know, the one thing that can be helpful here is this is a kind of an interesting topic, you know, the kind of the freestyle approach, which I'm not in any way criticizing. But there is something to be said about structure and understanding, because, you know, there's this threefold approach of understanding, experience, and realization. And very often what can happen, and this is, you know, you're particularly talented in this department, you have these quite remarkable experiences. But sometimes if they're not kind of not, I wouldn't say shrink wrap is definitely not the right word, but if they're not situated within a framework of understanding, then they just become spiritual candy. They just become state experiences. And so this is where it's helpful to have some retrofitting of understanding with the experiences. It'll help you understand what you're going through, and it'll also help you mature the experiences, because otherwise, and again, this is not a criticism, otherwise they just become really fascinating spiritual experiences. But at the end of the day, so what? So retrofitting some understanding will help you situate, you know, your questions intimated. I want to know a little bit more about deity. I want to know a little bit more about these lights. And so understanding this will actually empower your practice. And so the next time you have these experiences, you'll be better equipped to relate more, perhaps skillfully, and derive as much as you possibly can from these experiences. Does that land with you? Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I just want to ask one more, the circles that connect. You said they're called pintas. I just want to make sure.
That's an Indian. So when I went to ayahuasca, they talk about these visions in that languaging as pintas, which are these sacred geometric patterns. No, in the classic Tibetan texts are called bindus. And so, especially with Christopher Hatchell's book, Naked Seeing, he has a brilliant chapter unpacking what bindu is. It's a really big deal in the tantric world. And so what you're experiencing is you're experiencing these energy drops of light. These are the energy drops that actually make reality. And so this is really big, deep stuff. And so they're not pintas. Pintas is just the way, not just in a negative sense. So this is the way the shamans that I work with in Costa Rica talked about these visions of sacred geometry. The visions of the Togal practices, that's another term. These practices are situated within that rubric, T-H-O-G-A-L. These are the crossing over practices. That's the tradition that just rolls in this world. And diving into this stuff will rock your world. I mean, it's beyond profound because you're basically deconstructing reality into its fundamental nature as made of frozen light. So this stuff gets really, really profound. So check out those books. And then, man, every time you come on and you file some report, just makes me smile, bro. It's awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Great to see you. Pemdas, give me 1 second. I just want to go back and forth to the questions here. I want to dance between them, but you're next. So hold on a second. Okay. Question for Andrew. Thank you for teaching us all these interesting Tibetan Buddhist concepts. You're welcome. They make a lot of sense. And I believe most of them. Okay. I have, however, come to realize that merely believing them is not satisfactory. Cool. I want to know that they are true. Yeah, good for you. In your opinion, when does believing become knowing and what causes this transition to occur? Yeah, very nice. Well, Tim, this is the threefold pedagogical approach of hearing, contemplating, meditating. So the believing thing can help grease the skids, but the knowing part comes through contemplation and through meditation, through Gnostic, through Gnosis, through your body knowing. And so you take these things, you study them, you listen to them, you contemplate them. But then the most important thing here is practices. That's when you know. That's when your body knows. That's when you have this irrevocable Gnostic awareness. That's where you want to go. Because otherwise, it's just like you say, believing is not enough. That's not going to change you. What's going to change you is when you feel things, when you get in your body, when you're transformed. Oh, Barry found it, the dazzling dark. That's it. High five, Barry. Man, you are hired, bro. That's great. Okay, the basic technique I know of is to clear your mind and formulate a picture message you want to send to the ladybugs. Okay, cool. Also to visualize a beam of light connecting your heart to theirs. I don't know of more advanced communication techniques. That's great. That works for me. This stuff makes me smile. I love it. One more and then I'll get Pramdas. Thanks so much for highly recommending Bernardo Castro's Essentia course. Yeah, this guy's a rock star. I'm such a fan of his. I'm listening, watching it. Yeah, so this is a six-part talk, series of talks that Bernardo gave on his foundation called the Essentia Foundation that gives his view of analytic idealism. It's brilliant. I've been asking you to remember and be aware of the dream. I don't recall actually being lucid and saying I'm dreaming. What I remember is that in the dream, I tell myself it doesn't really matter how the situation plays out because I'm just watching it. What's the difference if there is one between this and being lucid? Well, that's a type of witness awareness. That's what's called pellucidity, and it's awesome. There are different ways to work with the dream arena. One is, in fact, in this kind of witnessing observational capacity. And it's very powerful because it basically differentiates you from the content of the dream. That in itself is fantastically liberating. So the difference between that and full-blown lucidity, again, this can happen with full-blown lucidity. You can have complete utter awareness that this pellucidity is taking place. You simply don't elect to engage it. You're just watching it. That's also a fantastically powerful way to do it. But the other form of lucid dreaming, of course, is then taking that content and then transforming it through the nine stages of dream yoga, kind of the more tantric approach. Okay. Yeah, Premdas, so it was the Bardo book by Trungpa Rinpoche. Yeah, Journey of the Mind. You got it. Okay. I'll come back to Premdas's other question, but maybe that's what he's going to ask me live. Fire away, Premdas. Nice to see you, my friend.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to begin by saying that this session Monday that you did on mantra last Monday was really excellent.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, that was very good. And if you could also consider doing one on Manjushri's mantra, because that's one I've been working with, you know, okay, based on your summer course that I did with you.
Yeah, cool.
So my question is about dualistic mindfulness or lucidity. I guess you would still call that lucidity, right? Even though it's dualistic, like in dream, in lucid dreaming, you're still dualistic.
Until you have what are called clear light dreams, yes, it's still dualistic.
Correct. Okay. So yeah, my question is, you know, one can be lucid within the mind, but once one sort of separates into nature of mind from that perspective, then is that like a deeper lucidity or a different lucidity?
That's the domain of the clear light dream. Yes, that's the deepest form of lucidity. Great questions, my friend. So yeah, lucidity is you know, it's a multivalent term, a synonym basically for awareness. And lucidity occurs across quite a spectrum, from barely lucid to hyperlucid to this ultimate lucidity, which is associated with nature of mind type stuff. And so when you have this level of lucidity, then you enter the domain of these clear light dreams. And so again, to read about those a little bit, I talk about it a little bit in my book, Dream Yoga, but that stuff I actually derive from, again, Tenzin Wangyal's beautiful book, The Tibetan Yogas of Dream and Sleep. He talks about the three main types of dreams, you know, samsaric dreams, dreams of clarity, and then clear light dreams. And so it's really only the clear light dreams only take place. It's the most advanced type of dreaming until dreaming stops altogether. It's a form of non-dualistic dreaming. For the deeper divers, this is where the generation of completion and creation stage practices come together in the dream arena. And this is where nature mind is completely simultaneously recognized within the dream. And so this also connects to one of the very first questions about the darkness thing. So when you dissolve into this formless awareness, then if something arises from that content, that's actually brings that level of luminosity with you, that manifests immediately at the highest level with these clear light dreams, where there's no subject, there's no object, the content still arises, and the content is reflexively aware. It's really hard to put this stuff into words because it's like, what WTF is this guy talking about? You know, you try to put duality into non-dualistic terms, good luck. Anybody here have a better way to do it? Let me know. It's really hard. So you read about it, you study about it, and then get your sorry ass on the cushion, better yet. And then you get your sorry ass in the bed. And then you have these experiences there, and then you'll know. Then you come up and you'll go, oh my gosh, this is what they're talking about, right? So I love your questions, and my friend, they're spot on. So look up maybe again, just to give you something to check out, Tenzin Wangyal's riff on the difference between dreams of clarity and clear light dreams. You'll get a better sense of what that's about. Basically, they're non-dualistic dreams. They're absolutely connected to this Rung Rig Yeshe. It's a type of Rung Rig Yeshe dream. Okay, does that make sense?
Super, thank you.
Cool. Okay, Kathy, fire away. And then I'm going to still get Julia. Julie has a question here. Katie has a question. So I'll get all these in here. So I'll get to them. Don't worry. But you've been waiting very patiently. Fire away.
Well, thank you, Andrew. Yeah, I wanted to just follow up on something that you were commenting on about dissolving the signs. I think somebody said the earth sign. And okay. I just wonder if you can talk a little bit more about the 8 signs of disillusion in general, because I try to practice them in meditation. I haven't gotten to the point of really being able to do it in sleep. But like when I get signs, I'm starting to actually be aware it's not just visual. There could be a lot of body sensation, like you're feeling, you know, anyway, when you're still in meditation, I might feel sensation of body melting, becoming a little bit looser.
Totally.
But sometimes I'm meditating on clear light and it just goes to clear light. I think it's clear light. It feels very clear. But then I didn't go through the signs. And then a few times I did the signs, but I felt like I never got to the clear light. So it's like, how can I sometimes get them in different sequences, you know?
Is this like a busload of like really advanced practitioners today or what, you guys? I cut you off, but these are awesome questions. So continue, and then I do have something to say, but these are like really deep stuff. So sorry, I cut you off. Continue. Was there anything else, Kathy, or you want me to say something?
I'm sorry. It like wasn't muting. Well, I just don't understand what I'm experiencing. And honestly, there are so few people that actually could comment. Either I think they don't want to talk about it or they don't have it. Like I get a lot of people saying, just imagine. I understand the difference between imagining and actually experiencing. And I spoke to two people that I think they actually have the experience. And it was in the second conversation I began to realize it's more so than just visually.
It's not a visualization. These are not visualizations. These are self-generated. So you're not visualizing them. And that's why the only way they can come about is through meditation and the winds entering the central channel. And so, So these are like amazing questions today. So the stages themselves, you know, going through those, Kathy, right now would be, oh my gosh, that's a really big topic. There's the literature here. I can refer you to so many different sources, but let me just tell you what comes immediately to mind that could be of some interest and benefit to you. This is the difference between Mahamudra and Dzogchen. So, and let me know if I spit out a term that doesn't mean anything to you, but when you do the Kadak, cutting through to Treksha practices, you can cut through to the clear light without any of these signs, because that's what differentiates Dzogchen from Mahamudra. It's just cutting through to primordial purity. So you can go directly into the clear light. When you're doing a more gradual Mahamudra approach, then the inner yogic thing comes into play. You're going to end up at the same place, but that's where all the secret signs come from. And the secret, you know, those outer, inner, and secret signs associated with each of these stages. And you're talking about the secret signs. And the secret signs are basically what they're indicative of are the encroachment of the luminosity of the mind. So when you're at the moment of complete samadhi, clear light samadhi in meditation, or death into luminous bardo dharmata, it'll be a full recognition of the clear light mind. And so when you're doing it in these practices, what's happening is the winds are entering the central channel. And every time one of the five winds, way beyond what I can unfold today, when those start to enter the central channel, that's when you start to have these signs. And so the signs, yes, they're you know, they're visual, but they're not visual because you're not seeing them with your physical eye. The mind's eye is seeing them. They're seeing themselves, right? There may seem to be, because it happens so fast, there may seem to be the sense that I'm seeing the mirage, the fireflies, the sparks, and all that kind of stuff. But that's actually happening retrospectively. That's happening posthumously. That's just because the mind is so fast. So basically, again, it's because it's just such a big topic. The reason they're taking place is the winds are entering the central channel. You're heading towards home. And they do these in these five stages. And if you understand, it's a little bit like Aaron's question, if you understand the eight stages of the dissolution process, then you have a much greater kind of orientation, GPS like installed in your system, where you go through them and you'll say, oh my gosh, you know, this is earth dissolving into water. This is water dissolving into fire. And every time that's happening, one of the winds is entering the central channel. When they all enter the central channel, at the end of these eight stages, you're gone. Gate. Kathy's no longer there. And then the clear light manifests in the flatline experience. And so this next thing is actually a little important. There's only the clear light. It's a little bit like the Dharmakaya issue. There may seem to be the illusion that I'm returning to the clear light. No, you're not. It just appears that way. Basically, what's happening is all the adventitious defilements are being removed. The display is being taken away and the essence is being recaptured. See? So the clear light is all there is. The Dharmakaya is all there is. The formless awareness that the first question was about, that's all there is. So you're actually not returning to the clear light because you never left it. What's happening is all the filaments that obscure it are being peeled away, just like what happens at death. So your meditation is a type of voluntary death. It's actually a form of what's called completion stage meditation, which purifies death. So you're doing a fantastic preparatory practice for the actual death process, where these eight signs will then occur in a much more heightened fashion, because it's no longer a concordant experience. Now the winds are really entering the central channel and they're not going to come back. But this glimpse of the child luminosity that you're having now, this is going to be a deal maker for you when you die, because you're going to have this big smile on your face. And somewhere in there, you're going to say, been there, done that. And you're going to see exactly what's going on. And so it's a form of Bardo yoga. So, oh my gosh, there's so much more to say here. But what I might recommend with some of these other, it's like, what happened tonight? I mean, is this like a consequence of Halloween? Like all these siddhas just unloaded on this program? Study the Eightfold Dissolution processes. I write about it again, sorry, shameless self-promotion, in my book, Preparing to Die. I have a lot on this. But you'll also find it in those other four classic texts that I mentioned earlier. And it's really helpful to understand this stuff in exactly the same way as Aaron's experience.
Yeah, I really, really appreciate it, Andrew. I understand, you know, I wanted to tell people this in case you guys are interested, because the issue of Togo came up. And I want to let you know, there's a teacher who actually, he's the only one that I know who actually attained the four visions and is actually teaching. And he's also having students, and he's, you know, looking to create like a Togo training community.
Yeah, it sounds like Justin, right?
No, the guy's name is Robert Olds.
I know him.
I'm going to like just type down, you know, in case you guys are interested, because the issue of Togo came up, and I've read and I've like whatever tried, but he's the only one that I ever came across that actually had the vision. And because he was an artist, he and his late wife did it in a 9-year seclusion retreat. I think
they're the ones that also are they the ones that printed out that book with all the visions printed in those wonderful drawings?
Yeah. I went to his physical retreat like in August of last year. I mean, just 2 months ago, and we tried it for 10 days and it was fantastic. And I felt like, oh my God, there's a chance to actually do this, because he said literally, seriously, anybody can do it. He's like, a child can do it. And he's like, you just need to have seclusion. You need to have deep devotion to the primordial heart, because he said all the vision come from the heart. And because he's an artist, he and his late wife, they drew photos of all the four stages. So I'll type down the name and you could go to his website. He is, you know, looking to have a Togo like training camp, that he's looking for land. And he's like, well, I see other people coming. And it just dawned on me today as I'm listening, maybe you guys are some people. So I'll just type it down and you do what you want. You know?
Yeah. I love it. I mean, I will say one thing, just a little bit of a surgeon's general warning with these practices. These practices, this is just me. This is just purely my opinion. I don't want to offend anybody. Be careful. There are a set of practices. There's a reason they're prescription strength. There's a reason people are going, what is this? What are they even talking about? There's a reason why this stuff is held within some levels of secrecy. And so I'm not in any way going to talk about anybody else and what they're doing with these practices. I'm here speaking a little bit as a representative of the tradition, that there are a handful of practices, Dark Retreat, Poa, Togal, Chandali. There are a handful of practices that can hurt you because they're really powerful. And often people go, oh, that's for me. I'm going to do that. I'm a special Westerner or whatever. I'm going to skip over all the preliminaries and I'm going to go right to the summit. Well, I know people who have done this sort of thing, and instead of lighting up, they burn up. They get hurt. So this is just me. I am not here to criticize anybody, but I do feel a responsibility, since I'm throwing out these terms and we're talking about some of the most sophisticated, evolved spiritual technology ever devised, that because these things are so transformative, they're also dangerous. So go in there well-informed, know what you're doing, be careful, and when in doubt, leave it out, because you can get in trouble with these practices. And so I'm going to say that, full disclosure, because I know people, they go in, they do these things, they get a little bit unhinged. You got to be a little careful when you're playing with this kind of thermonuclear stuff. Okay. But I appreciate it. High five. Good stuff. Okay, Brian, I'm going to get to you in just one second, my friend. Okay. From Katie, how does Rong Zheng Yeshe relate to Rong Bop? Again, like these questions are like, this is like postdoc type of questions. Are they the same thing? No, they're not, Katie. First of all, it's spelled Rong Bop, R-A-N-G, self, bop, falling, Rong Bop. And Rong, it's not Rong Zheng Yeshe, it's Rong Rig, R-A-N-G-R-I-G Yeshe. So that's a little bit different. Rong Rig Yeshe and Rong Bop, they're connected, but they're not the same. Rong Bop refers to the mind falling into itself. That's literally what the word means. This is what happens in really deep meditation. As Rumi put it so beautifully, opening, or what is it he say? Falling into wider, wider rings of being. I love that line. The mind falls into itself in deep meditation. It falls into itself in dreamless sleep. That's what happens. The mind falls, which is sometimes we feel it as falling. This is what happens when we die. So they're definitely connected, but they're not the same. A reflexive awareness, Rangri Yeshe, can be the fruition of the mind falling into itself, Rong Bop. So they're connected in that regard, but they're not the same. They're not isomorphic. Okay, Brian, far away. You've been very patient, my friend. And then there's one or more two here, and then we'll probably be done.
Awesome. I, you know, just really excited. This is my first night school. I don't know what you guys call it here, but this is, you know, I mean, how special to, you know, Google dream yoga and lucidity and, you know, all the negative things that can also happen there. And then eventually finding people that are devoting their lives to this. So I'm like super stoked to be here. This is like,
yeah, welcome.
Incredible.
You can just see what all kinds of weirdos and all the weird crap.
Oh, this is good. I'm fitting amazingly. This is my first introduction. No. So question is, and obviously zero expectations here or even pretending to absolutely know nothing, because I want to be a complete student. Where are you at with your own personal practice, Andrew, in staying lucid, like through every moment, through every experience and resting in that? And also, you know, where was the moment where that got, you know, where it kind of subtly became into play? And if did it ever go out, you know, like how did that sensation exist?
Oh, well, first of all, welcome, Brian. I appreciate it. You know, I'm always very, very reluctant to share these types of things. And let me tell you why. There's a classic Taoist saying that you probably heard. He who knows does not speak. He who speaks does not know. Well, I mean, we're all very, very screwed, right? Because I speak a hell of a lot and I don't know very much. And so let me tell you with how I land with this. There's something, this is actually quite important. These types of so-called spiritual experiences and insights, and there's a difference between experience and realization, they're not the same. These arise in the sanctuary of silence. And if you want them to mature, they need to be held in that sanctuary. And so I am extremely reluctant to talk about these sorts of things because they can be misunderstood. The only times I ever do it are under really quite special environments, intimate settings, where then there's just kind of group sharing thing going on. I'm just reluctant to do it because what can happen here is two things. One is I can unwittingly affect you in a way that may be less than ideal. But in a more selfish way, what can happen is they talk about this notion of don't let the cities leak. If you have these experiences and you don't hold them in the crucible of silence, then the experience actually never matures. Basically, it will kill your realization. And so this happens all the time in the West. People have a genuine, I'm not criticizing at all. People have a 100% legitimate experience. But experience is not the same as realization. The experience can often be so dramatic purely by contrast. And then instead of holding it in the sanctuary of silence, they start talking about it. And the minute you do that, the crap show starts, because you start, you lose the power, the spiritual energy is leaked, and it won't mature. The experience will not mature into realization. And so basically, I really appreciate your good heart. I appreciate you asking this question, but I'm going to take the fifth on this.
No, I mean, listen, that's the lesson that I get to learn, right? And that's just as important as the answer itself. So thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I actually find, let me tell you this, the most realized beings, and those of you I know, I mean, there's some people here that have been around the block, you will know this. The most realized beings I've ever met are the most ordinary, the most humble. I mean, they never talk about their realization. They live it, they breathe it in what they do and how they spend their days, you know, how they dedicate their lives for others. You want to see the realization of someone. What are they doing to help the world? What are they doing to help this planet? That's where the rubber meets the road. It's not by somebody saying, oh, I can rest in the Togal visions of the fourth Togal vision. Again, I'm not criticizing this, Kathy. Or I can rest in the 10th Bhumi. I can attain Nirodha Samapatti. No, man. You want to see the real authentic siddhas. They're the ones that are out there helping others and acting selflessly with complete humility, modesty, and openness. That's where you're going to see somebody's realization. That's you're good. Not going to see it from somebody flapping their lip and telling them, you know, I can do blah, 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 X, Y, Z. Throw me into a lab. I'll show you I can maintain constant consciousness. Okay, well, that's nice.
So as much as it'd be a moral and worthy goal to dedicate for the benefit of all beings, me being awake, regardless of the circumstances, but simultaneously, I'm doing the work in every single moment to be the best possible human.
Yeah, I mean, Suzuki Roshi said it beautifully. Fantastic. His statement, strictly speaking, there are no enlightened beings. There's only enlightened activity. So again, applied realization is what? Love, compassion, how people just basically live and breathe for the benefit of others. That's when you're going to know.
This group is so special, Andrew. Ah. Yes. Wait, one more quick question. I know it was probably limited. Is there a place that we can meditate to before we attempt lucidity where we can meet up with you in practice?
Yeah, our Monday night meditation group. So what we do here, again, you know, this is a free public format that I really groove on. It's super fun. But we do have this platform, Brian, called Nightclub. That's been going on for like 4 years. And then some, you probably heard Prem Dass talking about, you know, this Monday I've talked about meditation, a mantra. So we have an ongoing meditation thing that's happening. I mentioned at the beginning, this thing that Katie, Chelsea, and Bodhi are doing. So that's where we do this thing on a consistent kind of platform level. Here, we just get together once every 2 weeks to talk about all this kind of stuff. So if you want something a little bit more systematic and developmental, the Nightclub platform is the place to go.
Is there a place in the dreamscape that we can meet up with you?
You mean like in a program or literally at like mutual kind of dreaming thing?
Yeah, mutual dreaming.
This is a great question for Katie, Chelsea, and Bodhi. I leave it to them. Join their group.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, okay, you know, the shared dreaming thing. Yeah. That's a little bit graduate school type thing. I think the most important thing perhaps would be the programs that we do on that platform, the wonderful instructors. I'm not the only one. In fact, that's one thing I forgot to say. A dear, dear friend of mine, Rebecca Casilla from Ibiza. She's going to be coming on for the European community. And she's a wonderful female, amazing teacher. And I'm lucky to get her. So she's going to be coming on as well. So we got four or five people that come in once a week on Mondays to do this meditation thing. So that might resonate with you.
Thank you. I'll be there.
Yeah, thanks, man. Okay, so I'm going to put a close on the live questions. I'm going to just finish the ones that were piped in. this is a special night tonight, man. You guys are asking some killer cool questions. Aaron, I've definitely thought about yelling out for you in a lucid dream. Yeah, don't yell out for me, man. Yell out for a real teacher. Yell out for Tara or Vairochana, or don't yell out to me. You can do better. Okay. Oh, these links are awesome. Thank you, everybody, for these wonderful contributions. Yeah, Luminous Heart of Inner Radiance. That's it. Thank you, Kathy. That's great. That's it. It's a wonderful book. Yeah. And I'm cool for them that they're doing it. I mean, great. Lama Justin is also doing this sort of thing. some of this is cool. You just got to be careful, man. Just be careful. Be careful. Tim, I attended the Dream Yoga program with you in Tenzin Wangyal last week. Yeah, I had so much fun. I did 6 days. Yeah, Tim Lyons. Yeah, he's good. I did 6 days with Tenzin Wangyal. Tim Lyons had a, he was a Jungian who was there. He had a little health issue, but he's 100% okay, Tim. 100%. He's 100% okay. I love my time there. I had the best time. I did a cold plunge swim with Rinpoche every morning. I really connected to this guy. We might be working together. He invited me to collaborate with him later in the future, which would be so fun. This guy's a rock star. Oh, the Lama problem thing is not yet. Okay, that should be up by tomorrow because I know we're just talking about today. One from Julia. Julia has been very patient. Hi, Katie Love. I have tremors and it is comforting. Oh, yeah. Okay. I know what you are saying. It could be the earth magnetism frequency is being disrupted by solar flares. Okay, sounds good. A lot of big ones lately. Check out Stephen Burns on YouTube. It may be may not be an altogether bad thing. Humans may be shifting, ascending into a higher frequency in this age of Aquarius. What do I know? Thank you, Julia. Where's Julia? There you are, dear. Hi, nice to see you. So wonderful friends. Okay, everybody. One last one here from Marie. Wow. What is the difference between karmic imprints and karmic traces? They're the same. Bak-chak samskara. It's basically the same thing. How do they tie into the karmic winds that propel us in the bardo? Yes. Well, when those are what propel us in the bardo. The karmic imprints, the samskaras, those are your makers. When you die, you will meet your maker, which are these karmic imprints, these also called bak-chak, these seeds. That's the wind. That wind is what's actually released when you die. And that is, in fact, what blows you through involuntarily through the bardo. So that's a really big topic, wonderful, rich arena to explore these samskaras and bak-chak. So I have to say, I have done this thing for, 3 years now? I can't recall a session that was so deep, so wide. We've covered some really amazing stuff. So thank you, everybody. Sorry if I talk at a pretty rapid clip, but if I don't, we're going to be here for 3 hours. I don't get to eat. I get really grumpy, and you're going to see how totally unenlightened I really am. So I talk pretty damn fast. I apologize, just to try to get through everything. But much love to you all. Remember, always remember, if what we're doing here is not of benefit to others, to this planet, to all sentient life, it's irrelevant. This is just nothing but new age comfort plan stuff. What we're doing here is a waste of time. So take your merit, dedicate it to all sentient life forms. And then to whatever extent you can, share your light and your wisdom with the world, which needs it in a really big way. But otherwise, you know where we are. I'll see you around town, so to speak. All the best to you. Great to see everybody. Ciao, ciao.